Hey guys, welcome to Iron Game Chalk Talk. I'm your host, Rob McKeefer, in this episode number 244. I want to thank you guys for listening each week. Really appreciate those of you that like, share, and comment. Helps us continue to highlight the great people that we have in our business doing fantastic things. I also want to thank our sponsors, and specifically Train Heroic, for sponsoring this episode. Only partner with companies that I believe in, and Train Heroic has been a major part of the things that I've been doing for about the last 3 years. And so, really appreciate them, and like I said, if you're in the market, please reach out to them. If you're not, you know, the next time you see them at a conference, just say hello and tell them how much you appreciate them being a part of Iron Game Chalk Talk. This week, I'm joined by Max Linkheit. I mess it up, but I got to dust off the German. But I know him as Max, and he's a good friend from Germany, and just been doing some fantastic things, and excited you're coming on the show, man, finally.
Thank you. Thank you so much. It's really exciting to be on your show, and a great honor, obviously, as well.
The first German. I think you're the first German. 244 episodes, I think you're the first German we've had.
Which amazes me, because you've been in Germany before, right?
I started my career, basically, there. Yeah, in Berlin. Yeah, no doubt. So now I'll have to bust out a couple of German words throughout this, just to kind of keep
Please
it fun.
Please do so. I'm trying not to make fun of you.
Though. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, please. Well, Max is the strength coach for FC Nuremberg, but he's worked for Exos with Adidas. Camp, he's been on the corporate side. He's owned his own business. He's been in professional sport. Been a little bit everywhere, you know, with Google headquarters, with Adidas campus, with on his own facility, soccer program, the whole deal. But Max, which one of those experiences do you think best defines you as a strength coach? Where did you learn the most, maybe?
Yeah, it's a very good question. And it's also good to think about it, actually, and reflecting on it. So I'd say, in all honesty, which also, you know, kind of gets a little bit forgotten in our business as well, is kind of like, I think I learned the most as a personal trainer and also working with youth athletes.
Yeah.
In my own facility. So we were specialized on youth athletes from all different sports. And obviously in Germany, you can't make that much money with only sports. As you know, there's not, you know, it's not like five different major sports. It's basically soccer and that's it, which right. You can make money with, maybe a little bit of handball. So you have to have lots of personal training clients. And I think that actually made me a really good coach, because you get introduced and you have to deal with so many different personalities, so many different mindsets, so many different ages, so many different variables by itself, right? You know, somebody has aches and pains over there. Somebody's overexcited, wants to, you know, lose like 20 kilos or 40 pounds, 45 pounds, what it is, right? Somebody else wants to bulk up 40 pounds at the same time. And I think that's where the fun of coaching comes in, because you always have to keep them motivated. You always have to keep them on track. You always have to keep them going in the direction they want to go. And besides the fact that they have a actual real life going on at the same time, they're not pro athletes, right? So it's basically just, they pay you that you help them. And if you don't help them, they're just going to spend the money on somebody else. So it's, sure. I think really taught me how to engage with people, you know, the whole art of coaching,
right?
That Matt always talks about as well. And I can now use that, you know, with my pro athletes as well. I think that really helped me grow.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. I mean, I started as a floor trainer at 16 years old, and then personal trained all through the rest of high school and college. And, you know, it's kind of like, sales is a bad word in our profession. You know, sales is nobody thinks of themselves as a salesperson, but when you're a coach, you're selling yourself every day. You're selling yourself to your athletes, to the coaches, to the administration, whatever it is. And that experience of having to kind of create my elevator pitch and be able to go in and concisely kind of close the deal or get people to buy into you, that those are things that, you know, I learned early on, just like you did. So I agree with that.
Absolutely.
Don't get to work at Google or Exos, Adidas, the whole deal, without making a few mistakes along the way. What's one of the biggest mistakes you've made and kind of how you learned from it?
Well, first of all, I'd like to say I'm still making mistakes every single day. Right? It's nature of the game. If you don't make mistakes, you're not trying to evolve. You're not trying to improve.
Right.
And I think sometimes people, you know, personalities on Facebook, whatever, and social media, I think we should talk about, like, more about mistakes we're doing, because I think it was Cheryl Ford who said, you can't make all the mistakes yourself, so you have to learn from the mistakes of others.
Yeah.
Which is a fantastic quote. I'm trying to always, you know, also tell my players, right? Just try and talk to another and watch and observe. Anyhow, to answer your question, obviously, I think the biggest mistake I made in my early career, and sometimes I'm still guilty of charge nowadays, is I'm trying to coach the program and not the athlete, right? I have the best ideas in mind. I think this is perfect for this guy. It's perfect for today. It fits perfectly. And then, you know, things change because, you know, it's life changes by nature. So it's the athlete I coach.
It's
who he or she or they are at that specific day. And you can't be too rigid, because the best program is useless if the player is not engaged or the athlete is not engaged in it. And I think that is a mistake, which I learned the hard way, and again, sometimes you have all these ideas and you think, and that's why you do it again. I think that's why I'm still, you know, sometimes catch myself making the same mistake, but I guess it gets lesser and lesser, at least.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. I think, you know, so many times, especially in this false bravado that we have as coaches, and this, you know, this type A personality, we got to feel like we got it all put together, and you know, making mistakes or asking questions, that's, you know, if you don't have the information, that's not your fault. You know, your fault is if you don't go out and you try to get the answers, you know, or learn from your mistakes or other people's mistakes, which was I love that quote. And I think that ultimately, you know, that's the key is recognizing when you do make a mistake and then turn around and going and, you know, try not to make that mistake again, or having to be reminded, but get right back on track again. And I agree with that.
I think it comes down to the concept of showing vulnerability, right? I mean, if you show that you don't know it all and you make mistakes, also with athletes, like on my day-to-day basis, I'm the first one who says, like, you know, guys, let's just skip that. I think that was shit.
Yeah.
It was completely different in my head, but I'm seeing now it doesn't work. And nobody wants to deal with perfect people, because right. That makes them feel intimidated, and they don't, you know, want to show that they're actually imperfect as well. But everybody knows, like, deep inside, you know that you're imperfect. I know that I'm imperfect. And then I think if you're trying to be too perfect, then you get this discrepancy or this power distance, whatever you may call it, right?
Yeah, nobody wants to respond to a robot. You know, they want that human touch, that human interaction. And you're right. That's a fantastic point of, you know, if nobody wants to be imperfect in front of somebody that appears to be perfect. And yeah. So you got to share your wins and your losses. And I try to do that every single day. You and I are both, you know, we talk every time we get together, we talk about leadership books that we've read or, you know, we're obsessed with kind of leading groups, you know, and you've done it in some high performance settings, you know, be it, you know, in professional soccer or Adidas or Google or whatever, you know, may be. Talk a little bit about the team dynamics that exist when you're in a place like that, and then trying to lead both up and down.
Yeah. So first of all, every setting is different, right? I think so. You can't be too fixed in your approach to things. So I think the most important thing is, I don't know where I read this quote actually, but it's kind of like, what's the biggest mistakes leaders do? It's not to shut the fuck up. Excuse my language, right? So I think the first thing you have to learn is just listen. Listen. That way, it shows people that you care. So from a leadership point of view, I think that's very, very important as well, to build this kind of trust and that they feel they can share whatever it is with you. And obviously in a team setting, everybody knows what their role is, right? So I think it's all about role clarity as well, because everybody then knows what you expect from them, and also maybe what the other team members know what they can expect them, so you can make them reliable, and they have to, you know, stick to their guns at the end of the day. But this is only achieved by actually having a shared vision, right? So nothing can be done without this common sets of values and beliefs, right? Which goes back to our early days. When we were still in the Paleolithic area. Right? So we are a group, like we as humans are meant to be together, and then we have to create a certain hierarchy. And I think this can only be done by actually knowing what everybody wants, what everybody's responsible for, and then having this shared vision that everybody can work towards to, and which everything I do or everybody does by itself can be related to. So, you know, maybe a decision who's gonna be in group number one or group number two, who's right. gonna be selected for the next match. You know, all these kind of things all have to go back to, does it actually work with my core values or with the mission or vision we have as a team?
Right.
I think that where oftentimes nowadays, especially in sporting organizations, because of the great turnover, you know, I think sure. in Premier League, it's like a head coach is there on average 1.2 years, you know, and then the next head coach comes in. So
right.
if Klopp doesn't give that, you know, shared vision and then chooses the head coach for it, you can never achieve success on a sustainable level.
Right.
So I think.
Go ahead. So you think what?
Oh, sorry. No, I think that's basically, you know, when you think about team dynamics, that's also how you choose which players remains on the squad and maybe whose player or which player has to, you know, move on. Even if there might be a great human being, there might be a great player, right? But this might not just be the right fit for him. This right. might not be the right team for him at that specific moment in time. And that's fine. It's nobody's mistake. It's just acknowledging, okay, these are not my values at this specific point, or I don't want to be, you know, in the same direction as you guys are at the moment. It doesn't make him a bad person and or a leader a bad person. It's just, okay, it's not a perfect fit. And I think it sounds easy, but it's so hard in real life.
Right. Well, I think, I mean, you hit it right on the head with, you know, defining what your core values are and having a blueprint to kind of go back to as a way to keep you honest with coaches and athletes and administrators and people that you hire or move on. And, you know, I think what you talked about there is an important, I want to pull out for the coaches that are listening is it's when you go into a situation, you have an obligation to go in and find out what their core values are. And basically you have a decision to make there, whether or not that aligns for you. If you take the job and your core values don't align, that's your fault. That's not necessarily the company's fault. That's your fault, you know, and vice versa, if things were to change and a new leadership comes in and the core values are not the same, then you know, you're choosing to work there. It's not the other, you know, it's not just this is where the job is. And I think sometimes as coaches, we just go where the jobs are. We don't really do our research. You know, we go into situations that aren't best for us and, or we're not ready for, we don't identify with. And then we blame other people. Well, we have as much into that as anybody else. And so I'm glad you said that. I couldn't agree with you more.
No, you summed it up perfectly. I mean, that's it. It's always easier as a human to blame external factors than, you know, pulling up the mirror and looking into it.
Yeah.
Because it just doesn't, like, self-reflecting can hurt. Yeah. But it doesn't make you a bad person to have.
No. You know, we talk, a little bit about, you know, meditation and mindfulness and, you know, you use some Zen Buddha techniques, you know, when you're in situations, you know, how do you talk a little bit about, for yourself as a coach, for your athletes, how you get to that, you know, that parasympathetic state? How do you find ways to look to external religions or teachings or whatever it may be to find how to do that meditation and that mindfulness?
Well, first of all, like, I think I personally have to really be engaged and believe in these kind of practices in order to actually, you know, engage and get somebody else to maybe try it out at least, because that's basically, I think, the first thing you have to do, right? It's like making people interested in what you're doing. So kind of like the practice what you preach thingy.
Right.
You know, and for example, in training camp, you know, every morning I meditated, right? And then players, you know, were interested, like going, why are you, you know, waking up that early? And then what are you doing there? I said, like, I'm meditating. Right. I said, like, please join me. And, you know, and then all of a sudden, you know, when the first player comes, then it's not for everybody. It's fine. But for those, you know, like, let's say 4 or 5 people, they engage in something which is new, which brings them maybe out of the comfort zone in the first place, because they're not used to something like that, which is the essence again of, you know, personal mastery, or to improvement by itself, that you get out of the comfort zone. And I think that's the first key. And in regards of what sparked my interest in the first place, with Zen Buddhism, especially, is kind of, I think it started all with reading 11 Rings.
Yeah.
Phil Jackson, one of my favorite coaching books of all time. I mean, I think it should be amongst the top 10 every coach should read.
Yeah.
And learn so much. And is what the concept of mindfulness or mindful meditation. And he describes it very well. And then I looked it up, and he has an interview on YouTube with Oprah. And apparently, you know, Oprah gets everything out of anybody. So he started to talk about it. Right. So, and then it sparked my interest even more. And then, I just, you know, went online or on my app store and tried to find something like, okay, how do I start this? You know, and then all of a sudden Buddhism, like by itself came up. I thought, okay, I want to know more.
Right.
And then the really interesting thing is basically that, so you've read Game Changer, right?
Yep.
From Fergus Van Olle. And it's the concept of, there you go. See, there's so many books I can, and I have really bad sight, so I can't see that.
Yeah.
But I believe. So the point is, I think everything we do in sport organizations, may it be off or on the pitch, is all aligned with the complex systems theory.
Yeah.
Right. And if you look at it very closely, like, some things of Zen Buddhism actually relate completely to, you know, creating a learning organization, which is part of systems theory as well, because one of the key components is systems thinking, which basically means, you know, for those who don't know, it's kind of like the result is always more than the sum of its part.
Right.
And then you look at it and go like, yeah, of course, that's the same thing in Zen Buddhism, because the way you sit in Buddhism, you know, with your crossed legs, it's about creating unity. There's no right or wrong, right or left in that case. And there's no one leg or two leg. They all become one. So it's because it's one system. You can't look at the brain separately from the body. Or like in Zen Buddhism, you do that as well. Right. And then if you think about systems theory, yeah, it's the same thing. So personal mastery, it's one of, you know, constant growth. And then in systems thinking, you have that as well, or in learning organizations and so on. So there's many parallels which are now striking for me, going like, why didn't anybody think about that earlier? And so I'm trying to create in my private or personal life, I create this kind of complex system and apply my principles, basically. I'm trying to, not to say that it works all the time, right? I'm always an apprentice, you know, there's not such thing as, you know, mastery by nature.
Right.
I'm trying to apply these things then to my team. And again, I think it's all those personal conversations I have with athletes then that makes them interested and go like, you know what? That makes sense, Max. Okay, next time I'm in. I'm gonna try meditate with you just to see. And yeah. I think it's you know, very, very interesting.
Well, I think, again, two things to pull out there that I really like. I mean, one is, you know, you're not just sticking with whatever strength and conditioning book you read, you know, that had some mindfulness or meditation techniques in it. You branched out to, you know, outside religions, outside disciplines, outside influences, and found some ways to, and you're trying it out, you know, you're trying it out and things that work for you, you know, you hold on to things that don't work, you discard. Mm-hmm. And I think as coaches that we need to be that constant learner all the time. And then I think the second thing is the fact that you're spending time with that, because we all know that, you know, we got 2 hours in the weight room, but they got the 22 hours to mess up everything we did, right? And so if you're not finding ways to be involved in that through nutrition and education and your recovery techniques and mindfulness techniques and meditation techniques, you know, you're going to have problems, you know? And so for me, like I've tried meditation, I've tried these mindfulness techniques and I failed miserably. And it's just not for me. But then I turned around and I was like, you know what? You know, I take a walk every day. That's a form of meditation. You know, I work out. That's meditation for me, because I can actually clear my mind. You know, I have a morning and an evening routine that I'm pretty consistent with. Those are all, you know, that's kind of being mindful. And then, you know, I pray every day. And so I think, you know, you find what works for you and you start to identify, okay, I do at least things, but now when I'm in those moments, can I be a little bit more in that moment? You know, can I, you know, when I work out, can I, you know, I used to listen to an audiobook when I worked out. Like, you know what, I'm going to check out completely so that way I can, you know, I can just stop my brain from working for just an hour, you know? So I like the idea of looking outside, and then obviously I love the idea of finding ways to try to get into that parasympathetic state.
I think you said something really, really valuable there as well, which is clearing your mind. I think that's what it is, because there's two styles of learning, if you will, and both go hand in hand. There's the conscious learning, which you experience every day, you know, through books or through interaction. And then it will not be ingrained in you if you don't give yourself the chance to actually reflect on it. And that's a subconscious thing, and you can only do this if you have a cleared mind. So like you said, it can be anything. Somebody likes to mountain bike like you, or to go out on a walk outside, and there's no you know, perfect way to do it. It's just a matter of what works for you. So I think perfectly said from you.
Yeah, no, great. You know, we always I think we sat around at the last Australian clinic and talked a little bit about like the state of the union with the profession and where young coaches are at versus maybe, you know, coaches that have been in it and practitioners. What do you think that the gap is? What do you think that the young coach needs to hear? And what do you think that the old strength coach needs to hear?
Very good question. I think one challenge or one problem nowadays is because there's so many SNC coaches coming out of university without any practical experience. They expect something which is not reality. That's I think one thing, but it's not even their fault, because I think it's the university system actually. So if you look at it, you start, you know, you learn everything about anatomy maybe, you know, in your first year. Right. And then you narrow it down until you actually get your bachelor's, and even more narrow it down when you do a master's. Right. Because it's one specific topic.
Right.
So you become an expert at one single thing. But then as soon as you actually start working in the business, you realize I need like everything.
Specialized
is not what's necessary. I need to know about nutrition. I need to know about, you know, SNC. I need to know about programming. So Excel or something like that. Right. I need to know about tactics, maybe the sport, regardless which sport it is. Right. So, and I think that's kind of the fault of the university system, that we become specialized.
Right.
That's not what's necessary. It's make us a generalist.
Right.
And then we can actually succeed in the business. And I think that's kind of what young coaches, like, again, it's not their fault, but it's kind of what they need to be prepared. That university is just the start. And then you have to actually look at anything else but what you specialized in. And I think then for the old coaches, let's say experienced coaches, you know, it's kind of like there's always new things, you know. It's like, again, Zen Buddhism, kind of like, you know, only if you constantly learn and always think like go towards things, look at things like with a beginner's mind, you know, then you can actually find new things, and not think, yeah, I mastered it all. I've won five whatever Super Bowl rings.
Right. And
what I do is right. You know, no, maybe, but there's always something you can improve on. And maybe those young coaches have points of views that will help you to see things differently.
Sure. Yeah, I think, I think for both populations there, you know, you got to maintain, we have a saying at play that, you know, humble and hungry, you know, you got to be humble and hungry. You got to constantly, because if you are that coach, you know, that's at the Super Bowl team or premiership team or wherever, you win that championship. I mean, in this business, you could turn around and be last place the very next year, you know, doing the exact same program, you know, you're a player or two away from that, you know, sometimes. And I think, you know, so yeah, it's got a way of humbling you, and then you got to be hungry. You got to constantly be a lifelong learner and challenging your ideals. And, you know, it is very much an apprenticeship profession. You got to get in it. You got to figure out what you don't know. And then you got to start to find the experts and learn from the experts. And you're constantly doing that. And your knowledge base and your responsibilities grow as you grow, you know. And yeah. So you kind of stay in that perpetual state of a student, you know, the whole time. But it is when you say, I know it all, that's when you usually are not too far away from being out of the profession or retiring. Yeah.
So my wife and I went to Japan like 3 years ago. And one thing I always wanted to do was to see a samurai swordsmith in action.
So yeah,
like, it was amazing. So she tried everything organizing. And then we had like this translator and this cab driver. And they took us then to a swordsmith. And he was a master swordsmith, right? And I held these amazing swords in your hand, and then I asked him questions, and thanks to the translator, he was able to obviously answer them. So, and I asked him, okay, so why don't you have an apprentice? And he said, like, well, I'm not ready. I said, like, but you're 55. How can you not be ready? And he says, like, you know, I've been doing this now for I started as an apprentice like with the age of 17, and I think I still haven't made the perfect sword. And as long as I don't think that I made the perfect sword, I'm not ready to take on an apprentice.
Wow.
And I was like, this is so, like you said, humble.
Yeah.
Like, this guy made so many amazing swords in his life, right? And, you know, and he still says, I'm not ready. What can I teach? What can I possibly teach somebody if I didn't make the perfect sword yet? Which was like fantastic.
Yeah. Well, I love that. I also think that, you know, there's the coaches that listen to this that think that they can't teach anybody anything, and you can teach anybody that's behind you on the path that you're walking.
Yeah.
You know, and that, I think that sometimes I hear that excuse a lot too, where, there's better teachers than me, or who wants to hear what I have to say on a book, or who cares what I have to say on an article or whatever. And, there's always somebody a little bit further down the trail than you that you could help out with one piece of nugget, you know, nugget of information that maybe they identify you with you than nobody else. And so I think we all have an obligation, especially, I mean, they've been making samurai swords for thousands of years, right? Or, you know, whatever it's been, you know, in our profession, it's 60 something years old. And so we have an obligation to be documenting that and be giving that information out. But, well, man, we end the show with some resources here. Give us the best piece of coaching advice you ever received.
I think it's nobody cares until they know you care.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's the best piece of advice I ever got. And I can't remember if it was Mark Verstegen, I think, was it in the first place who told me that? And maybe a second one is learn to say no.
Yeah.
it's those two things, I think.
It's the hardest one for me to do right there.
That, that really still haunt me when I think about them.
You gave a couple of books. Give a book and an app and a website recommendation.
Okay. I think book, everybody should read the book Resilience.
Yep.
Like literally everybody should read this book. App, I think there is a meditation app, 10% Happier. It's free. And I think it's a very good introduction into meditation, and it's actually very non-spiritual. So even the guys who have no, you know, like approach to these kind of things will find something in there for them.
Right.
And what was the last one?
Website.
Website, Coursera.
Coursera.
Yeah. So there's, regardless which topic you want to learn more about, you'll find a course on it. And it's free, most likely.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, man, you know, I think one of the things that I appreciate so much about you and identify with is just you're a lifelong learner, but you're also a worldly learner. I mean, here you are in Germany. You've taken the time to invest in your development by going and doing mentorships at Exos and going to the United States. I mean, you and I have hung out in Australia a couple of times. I mean, it's, you know, you're not afraid to go anywhere and everywhere to learn. You're not afraid to go anywhere and everywhere to share. And to me, you know, that's the number one thing about this job that I'm currently in. And one of the major motivations for me to take it is to make a global impact. And you're definitely making a global impact. And just appreciate you coming on the show and sharing, man.
Thank you so much. It means the world from somebody like you who actually, you know, I look up to so much. And I think at some stage in my life, I can reach the level you have personally as well as professionally. So thank you so much for that.
Appreciate it, man. Thanks so much.
That's it for this episode of Iron Game Chalk Talk. Thanks to this week's guest as well as our sponsors for bringing this episode to you for free. Make sure to check out ronmckeefrey.com where you can join our mailing list, find the show notes, including all the links and resources mentioned, and information about Coach McKeefrey's other products. While you are there, please join Coach McKeefrey in the comments section thanking our guest for sharing. If you haven't subscribed to Iron Game Chalk Talk on YouTube or iTunes yet, make sure to do so. Comments, ratings, and reviews are always welcome. Coach McKeefrey can be found on Twitter at @rmckeefrey. On Facebook and YouTube at @ron.mckeefrey. That's it for this week. Be sure to check back next week for another great episode of Iron Game Chalk Talk.